Hello, my favorite people. How is everybody today? Happy podcast day. Happy Friday if you're listening to it as it drops. This is Nicole and Blue Dog, who is snoring shamelessly. So if you pick that up, it's not me making odd noises. It's the DOG. He's a happy, relaxed dude. What can you do? Anyway, hi everybody. Today I am bringing you a really cool interview. My first interview with a fellow practitioner who is also doing this work in her private practice in New York City. Her name is Julie Markowitz. And she contacted me, as many, many people do, completely out of the blue for me, meaning I did not know her. I didn't work with her. She and I had never crossed paths, but she wanted to come on the podcast and talk about her healing journey from many, many symptoms, very many debilitating symptoms, on the brink of suicide. And she wanted to share what has worked for her and to help people understand how possible this is for themselves. And I am always on board for that kind of conversation. So today, in a few minutes, I will share that podcast interview I did with Julie, which was really, really awesome, amazing information, and I think it's going to help a lot of people. Julie also mentions in the interview that, ironically, she spent last weekend at the Omega Institute doing a retreat that she had signed up for. I know it was around meditation of some sort. They do a lot of yoga and meditation stuff up there throughout the season. And she was just making me all excited. She was just telling me how amazing it is up there. And I remember, of course, because I've been there last summer and the summer before. And so I hope that you guys out there are considering joining us. I think Julie's going to come as well to Omega. And we are just, I mean, the group that we're cultivating is becoming so great. If you have any questions? I get emails all the time with questions about what exactly Omega is. I'm not going to bother with answering that again right here, just in case people have heard other podcasts that I've given about Omega. If you have any questions, just write to me. If you're thinking of coming yourself and you have a personal question about the retreat, which is a 5-day retreat, July 21st through the 26th, led completely by me and the people that I am bringing in to support my work, at the Omega Institute in upstate New York, Rhinebeck, New York. Some people are from upstate and saying it's not really upstate New York. It's only a couple hours from the city, so middle New York. But in any case, if you have any questions, just write to me, thecureforchronicpain@gmail.com. Write to me. Ask me anything. Ask me personal things. I don't care. I will share with you. I will help you understand if you are a candidate to join us this summer. And also, just to let you know, if you are suffering in chronic pain, Omega is amazing at helping people get around. They will bring a golf cart right to your door and bring you to the retreat, bring you to the meals, bring you to the evening programming, live music, and different interesting programs that are offered there. So do not discount yourself if you're having trouble with mobility, because they will help you. Just an amazing place. So please hit me up if you're interested in questions about Omega. Please, if this podcast is helping you, if you are enjoying it, if you join us every week, take 30 seconds and rate and review on iTunes. I have many, many tens of thousands of listens every week, and I only have 100 and something ratings. And I'm like, God, everybody is like me. I love something, and then the concept of going to rate it sometimes feels like I'm walking through quicksand. But if you can bring yourself to do it, I would appreciate it. To rate and review this podcast on iTunes to help get it more exposure. That would be awesome. If you are interested in taking my online course and you have not yet taken it, anyone who signs up for Omega between now and June 1st will get a copy of that course for free. All you have to do is, once you've signed up, email me at thecureforchronicpain@gmail.com. And I will send you your free download, deluxe version, the copy that you can keep forever. So that is out there for you. And if you're just new and learning about my work, check me out, thecureforchronicpain.com. Links on the resources page to everything that I do, including my book, my YouTube channel, my online course, my closed group on Facebook called Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs LCSW. Sign up and join us. It's a closed group. Nobody sees your posts but the people in the community. So join us. We have an awesome, really supportive community. And also, I am going to be doing a Facebook Live at 7 p.m. Eastern on May 22nd on Curable. So if you haven't yet tried the Curable app and you're thinking about joining it, I'm going to be doing that Facebook Live on their closed group for their Curable community, and that is on May 22nd. And I am going to be teaching this, my work, Journal Speak, and all my philosophies really in detail. And we're going to do a practice together. So if that interests you, please join us. Curable is an amazing app that takes you through the mind-body healing process, gives you a lot of different tools. And so, so join us for that. I'm trying to think. Do I have anything else to tell you? What can I tell you? I can tell you that no matter what kind of day you're having, just breathe and put your left foot and your right foot and your left foot and your right foot and just walk through it. In the last 24 hours, my washing machine crapped out and I had to buy a new washing machine, which is annoying and expensive. My brand new refrigerator, which was just bought 3 months ago, is just not working. Totally random. I don't know if Mercury's in retrograde or something, but my technology or whatever you would call that, my different methods of getting stuff done seems to be failing. And my son lost his trumpet at school. So these are the things that happened in the last 24 hours. What's your day been like? Because even if your day is crappy and life is lifey, as I like to say, doesn't have to be a shitty day. It can be a fun day. You can choose to say, yes, I'm going to feel into those feelings of frustration and of fear and of anger. And then I'm just going to say, but I don't want to waste this day. I don't want to lose this day. I'm going to capture the moments of joy as I can, which I am. And I am right now with you. So anyway, it's really a beautiful day to be together, and I'm excited to share my interview with you today with Julie Markowitz. So without further ado, I give you Julie. Hi, everybody. I am here today with Julie Markowitz, who is a practicing therapist in New York City and reached out to me via my website after listening to the podcast herself and wanting to share her own recovery story. And after hearing a little about it, I was very enthusiastic about having Julie on the program today. So welcome, Julie.
Thanks, Nicole. I'm so excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your journey, your history, any way you want to put it out there, and we will figure out where this is going to go.
Okay. So I think we might as well start at the very beginning. My TMS journey started very, very early. I actually had a very rare autoimmune disease when I was 18 months old. It's called ITP. It's a rare bleeding disorder, and I almost bled out. So I developed chronic pain very, very early. I was around 10 years old. I was in physical pain all the time. I complained about it. I also developed an eating disorder at that time. I was extremely depressed from a very young age, and I started therapy around age 12. I was getting massages. The massage therapist would ask me why I was coming in, and then they would touch my back and they would be like, oh my God, your back is like someone who's like 40. It was pretty scary, actually.
Oh, yeah, I imagine. And from such a young age, you probably really filled with fear.
I was incredibly anxious and afraid as a child. I had a lot of I was overly responsible as a kid. My life was really hard. I was a total overachiever. I was planning to go to an Ivy League school by the age of 9. I started my own business by age 10, selling Beanie Babies online.
Wow. All right. Well, then you were actually taking it, you were taking your fear and you were putting it into action, but sometimes that can really lead to the TMS personality coming out in full bloom.
Exactly. I have a total TMS personality. I was kind of the family caretaker. I took on so much responsibility at such a young age. And then I think as I got older, things just kind of got so much worse. I was super depressed. I kept putting myself into therapy. I was obsessed with getting perfect grades and trying to be the perfect kid. I don't think I ever got in trouble. And it was just, I kept saying to myself as a teenager, like, why do I hate myself? Why am I so miserable? Can anyone help me? And I think that this is a huge problem with people with TMS. We feel like no one wants to help us or no one can help us.
Right.
And so then I did get into an Ivy League college and I was still in therapy. Nothing was changing. I had a horrible bout of back pain in college that was like nothing that I had ever experienced before. I could barely get out of bed. And it was coming at a time when I was applying for very intense internships. I was taking the GMAT actually during college, which I don't really understand why I was doing that. But it just speaks to like the level of stress that I had been under my entire life, which I now know is due to childhood trauma.
So talk more about that, because when people bring up the word childhood trauma, I think it's sort of a big umbrella that people don't always know what to put underneath that umbrella in order to understand their own trauma. Because to some extent, childhood is traumatic. You know, it's a time of life where we have no control over our circumstances. The adults in our lives, I felt very much this way as a child. The adults in my life were determining my fate. And I think a lot of TMS is born there. A lot of mind-body illness, a lot of stress and fear and anger is born there from the very lack of control that is childhood. So when you say talking about childhood trauma, can you talk more about that?
Sure. I think that what I'm talking about in particular is a lot of repetitive misattunements. My family didn't talk about feelings. The only feeling that existed was fat, which I didn't understand until my late 20s that fat is not a feeling. So it was because I had all of this, I had all the emotional responsibility in the family. No one actually had attunement to what my feelings were. There was enmeshment, which means like there weren't very good boundaries. And so I think that just basically from the moment I was born, it was very hard for me to exist as an individual person with my own feelings.
And where were you in the birth order? Like, what did your family look like?
I'm the middle.
So who else is in your family? Brothers, sisters?
I have an older brother and a younger sister. And I also think that part of my trauma was being a female in a fairly misogynistic family unit. I think that my brother got a lot of privilege and was kind of looked to as, kind of idealized, I guess.
Yeah.
And so that actually transitions to where my TMS story goes deeper. When I was in my mid-20s, I developed severe groin pain. It was absolutely horrific. I could barely walk. Every time I took a step, I would have shooting pain. First, it was in my lower abdomen, and I had a lot of stuff going on at the time. I was getting married, which I was very conflicted about. I was at a job that I hated. I was, again, super depressed. I was also applying to business school, which I was also extremely conflicted about, because I don't necessarily know that that was my own decision. Because of this history of not being able to be my own person, it was really hard for me to understand what I wanted. So I had so much repressed anger and so much doubt and fear.
Yeah. Wow. And you know what? I think that that's going to be really helpful to people to hear. And I want to say to anyone listening to keep in mind that sometimes our decisions feel like our decisions, but there's this sort of intuition that comes into our minds where it's like, I just don't fully align with this decision, but I keep thinking it's my decision. You know, where is this decision coming from? So I think you bring up a really good point that sometimes our trauma, however it is labeled, is defining and is determining our decisions. And then that inner conflict can cause a lot of feelings that need to be repressed by necessity because we get ourselves into decisions and then we're stuck in our decisions. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. When I get to the recovery portion, I will definitely talk more about unconscious decisions and how they lead to conflict.
Right. Okay. So go on. So you were applying to business school, you were preparing to be married. And how old are you right now, Julie?
I'm 31.
Okay. So this was how many years ago that you're telling this part of the story?
This was in 2012.
Okay. So 7 years ago. Okay. Go on.
Yeah. So At the time, I was totally decompensating. My anxiety was so out of control. I thought I had a debilitating neurological condition. And I kept going to doctors. And so finally, I got a diagnosis, which I was so thrilled about. I was told that I had a sports hernia. Have you ever heard of that, Nicole?
I've heard of hernia. I've never heard of someone labeling it specifically a sports hernia. So why don't you tell more about that?
So a sports hernia is kind of any sort of groin injury. In this case, it's specifically a tear of the rectus abdominis. Apparently, mostly professional athletes get that. To this day, I'm very dubious about how that happened. Like, if this was something that, because of my history of TMS and anorexia, that I just had very... there was something up with my tissue that it would have been a tear down there.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense, especially the anorexia piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So go on. So you were diagnosed and you were relieved. And I want to bring connection to that. We love getting diagnoses.
Diagnoses, yes, we do.
Make people feel super, super comfortable because finally we can put our power and our health into someone else's hands. Because if there's a diagnosis and there's a piece of paper that says what you have, what you are, then you don't have to have so much fear anymore that it's your job to fix it. But the deep irony and what I try so hard to teach people is in the end, it does come back to that we have the power to heal ourselves, which is both a blessing and a curse because we love to put our power into a pill or into a doctor or into a surgery or into a diagnosis because it feels, first of all, it feels like a temporary relief because if somebody else has it and they can get better, then we can get better. And it also feels like someone cares about us. Every time I've ever been given a diagnosis, it's like, oh, thank you. So you say I have this and you know me, you see me. You see me as a person who has this thing. I am a person who suffers from spondylolisthesis. Thank you. But the really depressing part and the part that I think makes people fall really hard and fast is when you get this diagnosis, you try all the things that are associated with easing this diagnosis and they don't work. And then it's abject terror. So how did it work for you?
Well, Nicole, I like to tell people this about TMS all the time. It's that we need to stop looking for a miracle cure and giving up our power to other people because that is going to keep perpetuating the TMS, the doubt in ourselves.
Right.
So that's absolutely what I did. I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited for this surgery because after I was diagnosed with this, I was given surgery the next day. And I was like, oh my God, my life is going to change forever. This is going to be the best thing. And then I woke up from surgery and I was like, oh my God, my life is so much better. I think that a lot of it was the effect of the anesthesia.
Right.
And, you know, I was just super excited. And then all of that fear that I had because of, I guess this is another part of trauma that I wanted to talk about is that, have you ever talked about attachment on the show at all?
I've never gotten deep into I know all about attachment. I've never gotten deep into psychological sort of definitions and processes, because I don't want to get people sort of mired in that, but I'm certainly happy to talk about it. So bring it up. Let's do it.
So many years later, I realized that my attachment style was disorganized, which I think a good definition of that is fear without resolution. Mm-hmm. So what it means is that our caretakers are supposed to kind of quell our fear for us, but I had no one in my life that was able to mitigate my fear. So I was in terror all the time. I was in fight or flight all the time. So as soon as this anesthesia wore up, I immediately started freaking out because I was like, there's pain on the other side of my pelvis now.
Right.
They should have operated on the other side. So I started like freaking out. I couldn't focus on anything. I was like, they should have operated on both sides. I can't believe they didn't do this. I was seeing a physical therapist at the time. I lost about 20 pounds in a month. I was just totally freaked out. Again, my anxiety was through the roof. I couldn't focus on anything except the pain. And that's another thing I want to say about TMS. TMS is a wonderful distraction from things we just really are afraid to think about.
And that's, of course, the very basis of TMS theory, which is what Dr. Sarno taught in the early days, which is that the only reason for the pain and the symptoms of chronic illness are to distract us from the things in our lives that we deem impossible to think about. You know, the child that you have that you can't handle and don't like, and it's your child, the job that you have that you can't quit, the money problems that you have that you cannot resolve, you can't grow money from trees, you know, the mother that you had that didn't love you right, and now you're stuck taking care of her as she gets older. You know, this is all very basic human stuff that happens to us, but because we can't think, we can't bear to think about the complexities of it, the nervous system deems the emotions connected to that stuff as a greater predator than pelvic pain or shoulder pain or backaches or irritable bowel or migraines or fibro or tons of different autoimmune conditions that, you know, have symptoms. And yep, that's the way it goes.
Exactly. And so I did not want to think about how out of control I felt. And I think helplessness is a huge component of TMS. I did not want to think about how I did not want to get married. I did not want to think about how I did not want to go to business school and what a failure I was going to be if I didn't get into the perfect business school, and how much I hated my job, where everyone told me how angry I looked all the time. And I was just a mess. So then what happened was I was in such fear and texting the surgeon all the time about how afraid I was. I insisted that he operated on the other side, which I don't necessarily think was the best decision at this point. And then things just completely went down the tubes. I was having electrical shocks down my leg all the time. I had severe pain in my entire groin, like, which made sitting impossible. I was still going to PT. I started seeing hip surgeons. I started doing hypnosis. I was already doing acupuncture, and actually my acupuncturist at the time mentioned to me, he mentioned a lot of unhelpful things, which, again, I want to speak to trauma-informed care when people talk to people who are in severe physical pain and also have like debilitating anxiety. He asked me if I thought that I had autism.
Oh my God.
Which was, yeah, like that was traumatic in and of itself. But then he also said to me, you know, Julie, pain in this area is usually due to anger. There's this guy named John Sarno who talks about it. And I was like, I'm not angry.
Right.
So we eventually stopped seeing each other. But I do appreciate that he told me about Dr. Sarno at that point. Then I was so, so depressed. I was completely non-functional, except I was still going to my job. I was still planning my wedding. I was still applying to business school. But for me, like, this was very non-functional.
Well, you're high functioning. You're high functioning for a non-functional person. But I want to go back and I want to say something that you brought up that I think people really need to hear. Okay, so Julie gets this first surgery. She has what we all have, which this very hopeful pie in the sky. I'm handing over my power to someone. They're going to fix me, and then I'm going to be all better. So the fall from grace from that is sharp when that doesn't happen. So after that happened, she gets the pain in the other side of her groin, and she insists, because what happens is we take back our power, but we don't take back our power fueled by love. We take back our power fueled by tremendous fear that pretty much moves into terror. And we start orchestrating our lives based on our fear. And then, Julie, am I to understand you had the surgery again? Yes?
I did.
Okay. So then she has the surgery again for the other side, because most doctors, when they have a patient who becomes this hysterical, will actually listen to the patient because they don't want to be sued for malpractice. You know, this is a very common thing I hear from doctors. They say, well, you know, because I have to say, I have a very nice relationship with the medical community because I'm not against them. They're not against me. And we share the same frustration, which is we want to help people in pain. And doctors come to me often and they say, Nicole, I'm not saying that I thought the next surgery or the next whatever was necessary. But when a patient is that hysterical, and when you know that you can't prescribe ongoing opioids because it's very clear that they're not helping and it's creating a society of addiction, then sometimes you end up doing things because you need to cover yourself. You need to do what the patient needs. And it becomes very confusing and it becomes a really gray area. So she has a second surgery. And what I want to highlight is what she said, which is now this electric pain is running down her leg. So I want to explain to everybody something that I say a billion times, so welcome to it again, which is when we have TMS, when we have our nervous system and our brain informing our nervous system and we are in a sustained, constant fight or flight, your body can produce anything. It's so important for people to hear, because what happens is they get some really bizarre symptom that seems either related or unrelated to either a surgery or a former symptom, and they become so confused and they think, well, this is different now. Well, maybe my groin was this, but the electric down my leg, that's real or that's different. And I just want to reiterate, as I always do, everything is real, because whatever you feel is real. All it is a sensation that is running through your body. It is real as real as real. But if you are in the sustained fight or flight, TMS is at the helm. And anything can happen to you. And no one thing is more real or more fixable by physical means than any other. Does that make sense to you, Julie, that I'm bringing that up? Because I feel like that's important, right?
Absolutely. I think that our bodies are so, our mind and body are so powerful. They can manifest any kind of symptom that would scare the crap out of someone.
That's right.
That's exactly what I needed. I needed to be even more frightened and terrified, to keep distracting from all of this stuff that I did not want to deal with. Even though I was still going to therapy, I was trying to deal with it, but nothing seemed to be helping me. So I saw every kind of doctor imaginable at this point. Everyone had a different diagnosis. I was considering getting, so I did have structural abnormalities in my hips, as we all do.
Right.
So a doctor would have been willing to operate on my hip. I tried another round of PT, didn't help. I tried pelvic floor PT, which really didn't help. I had one, physical therapist just get so angry at me and was like, Julie, do you want to ruin your life? Because I think you're ruining your life. And you need to decide what's actually going on with you. Like, do you hate your job? Do you hate your fiance? Like what is going on with you? Because these groin symptoms are generally in your head, which I know that the intention behind what he was saying was trying to be helpful, but the way he said it was not helpful. And for someone that was in such, panic and despair, that's exactly what I didn't need to hear, because I felt like he was the one person that I could feel like I could count on at that point.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to say, as I always scream from the rooftops, the sentence, the pain is in your head, I don't want it even in the same continent as my work because because I think that Dr. Sarno was dismissed universally. Don't tell me the pain is in my head. That I am in excruciating pain. Are you freaking trying to tell me that pain is in my head? I have spent pretty much the bulk of my career. I think the tagline on my website is the pain is not in your head, but the solution is not in your body. You know, so I definitely want people to understand that what that person said to Julie was not called for, because the part of the sustained fight or flight reaction is the person's brain, is your brain, my brain, Julie's brain, is in a space of such fear that hearing that puts you in the opposite direction, right?
Absolutely. And so getting more to what some very unhelpful comments, I forgot to mention at this point in time, I had decided that I either had MS or ALS. Mm-hmm. And so I went to see a neurologist, and the neurologist told me, I think you should see a psychiatrist.
And that was probably not helpful at the time to you.
Oh, it was not helpful. I already had a psychiatrist, by the way. So it was really, really, to me, that comment said, you're crazy, Julie.
Right.
So after this, I started looking on Amazon for books about how to heal yourself. And I found Dr. Schubiner's book, and I started it's Unlearn Your Pain.
Yep.
And I tried to do it on my own, but due to the fact that I had so much trauma that really needed to be processed with someone and hadn't been processed with someone, I don't think that I was necessarily in the best position to figure all of this out on my own. I know that a lot of people you work with do great with journal speak.
On their own, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. They do and they don't. That's why I have over the years, at first I just wrote the book in 2012, and I was like, okay, well, people are going to read this book and then they're going to be fine. And then it occurred to me as I was, you know, growing up in this, as we all are growing up all the time, I realized people need a lot more support than just reading a book. And that's the only thing Dr. Sarno was really able to offer. You know, I think he had his lectures in the city, but that was just a couple lectures. And when I spoke on the alumni panel in the early 2000s, that went on for a few years. But once he retired, that was over. And so I do think people can do it on their own, but I do think that the more resources they have, the better, which is why after the book, I did the YouTube channel and then the online course and then the podcast and then, I don't know, whatever else I do. And so I do think people can do it on their own, but I think what you're saying is you needed a lot more support.
I needed a lot more support. And I think that one slight criticism I have of Dr. Sarno's books is he says like 95% of people can get better just by reading the book. Yeah. Is that the right percentage that he says?
Well, I say this with always my hand to my heart, with deep respect for Dr. Sarno. Whenever I even slightly criticize him, just because I think his genius was immeasurable. But what I think Dr. Sarno did at that time was a huge disservice, because 95% of the people do not get better from reading the book. What happens to people, I believe, is when you are availed of the information that you have the power to make yourself well, that there is nothing really wrong with you, that you can firmly step into the fact that you're going to be okay. It's just, you know, this is TMS and this is what TMS is. A lot of people have a very dramatic cessation of pain or a very dramatic shift in their mindset, which leads the fear to drop. But ongoing wellness is almost never achieved without doing the work.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think part of my PSA here is just that there does not have to be shame, and there should not be shame in seeking help directly.
Yes.
Because people with TMS love to think that they can solve everything on their own, and we all need help. So the next part of the story is that, you know, I saw a bunch more doctors, and then finally I went to see a nerve surgeon in Washington, D.C. that I found because I was using Dr. Google. Mm-hmm. And I had been talking to someone on a forum that had had similar problems to me. And she said, this doctor's wonderful, go see him. And oh my God, for the first time in my life, he said to me, I want to help you. Your pain is real. I don't want to ever operate on you, but I think that you should talk to a pain therapist. And I was like, I already have a therapist. And he's like, no, someone specifically about the pain. And so when he actually sat with me for an hour and just was like, all of this is real pain, it's okay, I was like, who are you?
Yeah.
So that healing moment, I think, changed the entire trajectory of my life, because what I did go home and do was Google pain psychologist New York City. And just to back up a little bit, I had already tried to talk to a TMS therapist who refused to see me because he didn't necessarily believe that I was okay to see him. So that kind of sucked. But I made a call to my current therapist, Dr. Dan Ratner, and it just completely changed my life. The first session I met with him, he was like, I want to help you, and I know I can.
Yes, yes, therapists out there, say this stuff more often. I say this to people all the time. I say to them, you are going to be well. I'm 100% sure. Just do the work. Believe what I say. Do the work. And operate in patience of kindness for yourself. It might take a little while, you know, it might take some peaks and valleys. It's going to be a journey, but you are going to be, you're going to operate in complete freedom. And when I say that to people, they're always like, who do you think you are? You're not psychic. You don't know me. And I say, but I do know you, because we're all really the same. You know, we're all really very much the same when we suffer. When we suffer the same. And although that might sound crazy that I say that, I've been doing it for over 20 years. And everybody's getting well. So I'm going to keep doing it.
Nicole, I say the same thing to everyone I work with. I can help you, and you're not crazy, and the pain is real, and we're going to get through this. And I see the same thing happen every single time.
Yep.
So what that first session, though, I told Dan, like, I have had an eating disorder for my entire life. I'm super depressed. I'm suicidal. I have horrible anxiety. Oh, and this groin pain that I'm coming to you for. And he just goes, yeah, we can deal with all of that. And I was like, I've never heard a therapist say that to me before.
Right.
And what is different about his approach is that it is trauma informed. He saw me as a person who had experienced a lot of trauma and needed to be treated as such. Because I think there are a lot of problems in the mental health field. And we look a lot at symptoms, and I had been pathologized by a lot of people because, you know, these symptoms I were having were horrible, and I did act like I was crazy, I guess, because I was in so much pain physically and mentally, and it seemed like no one wanted to help me. So the pain actually resolved within a few months. We did a very similar practice to journal speak, which was just journaling about when symptoms would come up, what feelings were involved in that. I realized how much of that personality type that I did have, the perfectionist, the goodest, the always trying to take care of everyone. And so the pain was really just a cover for very, very deep, painful feelings of feeling very unloved, very alone, very, very bad about myself. And so we've been working together for 6 years now, and I'm happy to say that I am fully recovered from every single symptom that I walked in with.
Amazing. Amazing. And I want everybody, I know that, you know, listen, I have people who write to me that say, I listen to your podcast just because it makes my day, or just because it's making me have my best life. But there's also a lot of people out there who are listening to this because they are where Julie was 6+ years ago, and they are completely, you know, hopeless and bereft and terrified. I want you guys to hear what she just said, which is, when you think about how it feels to feel unloved, when you think about how it feels to feel unwanted, uncared for, not prioritized, not connected, because, you know, very, very central to human survival is connection. And if you feel those things, the quote unquote pain of that it's far greater than any physical thing that could, you know, come upon your body. And so if you think about how kind and loving and generous your nervous system and your brain are for allowing you to have a physical pain rather than to feel the depth of despair at being unloved. And of course, Julie, you are not unloved, but if your perception was that you were unloved, that's enough.
Exactly. And that's an amazing point about connection, because the actual healing that took place was this healing relationship with my therapist that healed that attachment trauma. I earned a secure attachment to him, and that because all of these symptoms, I truly believe, are a distraction from troubles with being close to other people in connection. Mm-hmm. And what I needed was connection. And I truly believe also that TMS symptoms often serve as a way for us to not deal with the fact that all of us are terrified of being totally vulnerable and open with other people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a reason why Brené Brown's work is the most popular thing that's ever come across psychology in 10 years, because she's talking about vulnerability. She's talking about how ashamed we are because vulnerability feels like weakness, whereas vulnerability is our deepest ability to connect with other people.
Yes. And it's interesting. I had never heard eating disorders treated this way. We actually never treated my eating disorder. We had treated me and created this healing connection to the point where my eating disorder just went away, because like all the other symptoms, it was just a distraction, and I didn't need the distraction anymore because I have a full connected life now.
And you know what? That's exactly what I always tell people. So you just put different words to it when you talked about the eating disorder. I say, so people say, well, I have this pain, this pain, this pain, this pain, this pain. And I say, okay, okay. And I say exactly what your psychologist said to you, which is, I hear you. All your pain is real. I can help you. And I hope all my work speaks that sentence. And then I say, you don't have to worry about getting rid of your stomach aches, getting rid of your migraines, getting rid of your fibro. You don't have to worry about that. Feel the feelings. The pain signals will stop firing, because the pain signals are simply a distraction and a protection against the feelings that are repressed, that are struggling and aching to rise, because human life invites feelings to rise. We're always being triggered. If something happened to me as a kid and my kid is going through a similar thing, you guys better believe it, I am triggered beyond. I'm like a fireworks in here, right inside me. And I need to acknowledge that, or else it's gotta be expressed somewhere.
Absolutely. It's funny. So I actually was at the Omega Institute over the weekend, and I got sick beforehand. I was having back pain, and I was just like, okay, there's something I'm not dealing with. And all of a sudden I was in the middle of a meditation. And as you've described Omega, it's very, very beautiful. Yeah. And it's very healing. And all of a sudden I was doing a meditation in which you're not supposed to do anything. And it was like this tremendous relief just washed over me. And I was like, oh, I don't have to be afraid of anything anymore. Everything is okay. These symptoms that I'm experiencing right now, they were information about how I need to stop doing so much.
Yeah. And those kind of life lessons, you know, people always say to me, they entered into this work to get rid of their pain. But I always agree with them when they say the pain is kind of the biggest, littlest part, because it helps you walk through the door. But, and I've been saying this for years, pain is just an invitation. Pain is just inviting you to a precipice of a truth that has been awaiting your acknowledgement. And if, Julie, for years and years and years, you have been doing to, let's say, be loved, be important, be worthy, be enough, and you realize, wait a second, I am those things. I don't have to do so much. There's the healing part that has nothing to do with your pain, but it has everything to do with your pain, you know?
Exactly. And I love that analogy of walking through the door, because I never thought in my entire life, when I was obsessed with my groin pain, that when I would pray every day that I would just have like an hour without it, that I would be grateful for that pain. But that pain is what led me to find the truth about what you're talking about, that I did suffer tremendously for most of my life, but that didn't mean that there was anything wrong with me. It meant something happened to me and that I just needed to see myself as okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this brings you there. So I'm curious because as it is the case with a lot of people who I interview who I didn't work with directly, they found me somehow. How did you become acquainted with my work that you reached out to me?
I actually heard about your work a long time ago because I spent a good amount of time on TMS Wiki. But I actually tried to send my sister to you, but you weren't seeing patients at the time. You're someone that I was speaking to on TMS Wiki recommended your podcast. And so since I am a TMS therapist as well, and I'm always looking for resources to give my patients, I started listening to your podcast and I've really enjoyed it. It's been super helpful for me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I am so glad you reached out. This has been a really, really interesting conversation. You are my first professional interview. I normally interview former patients or people who have written to me around the world that have healed. Actually a couple weeks ago, I interviewed Athena, who's going to be with me at Omega this summer, but I have not interviewed a professional that does this work alongside me. And I think this conversation has been super, super helpful and informative to people who are looking for some guidance or from some reassurance in their own journey. So thank you so much. And before we end today, is there any kind of closing words of wisdom or final piece that you want to say to anyone out there listening that is struggling?
I do. I think that a few things. Your pain is real. Any symptoms that you're having can go away. I think that access to good therapy is very hard, but it's also, it does exist. And I think that there is no shame in going to therapy. I think that everyone should be in therapy. I think that the world would be a better place if we all were working on dealing with our emotional trauma. And I hope that my story has given some people some hope for that you can get better and you are okay as you are.
Awesome. Well, that is wonderful closing words. Everybody, listen up to that, because it's very, very important. And do this work for yourself. Give yourself the gift of being curious. Give yourself the gift of knowing that people from all walks of life with all different symptoms are healing because all the signals come from the same place. I have often been asked, how is it possible that you, Nicole, claim that your work can cure irritable bowel the same way it can cure migraines, the same way it can cure my knee pain? How? And I say, well, because if you cut off your head, you're not going to feel anything. The brain and the nervous system are the only things that can make you feel anything. So if you go to the root, if you stop putting a Band-Aid on a tumor, if you go in and excavate what you need to excavate, you will be well. And I think, Julie, your story is a beautiful example of that. And so thank you so much for being here and talking to us today.
Thank you, Nicole. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for spreading this message. It's so important.
Well, it is so important. And I will continue to do so until my dying day, because you guys know this is my passion and it is something that will never, ever, never die for me, because it's everything that it has created my entire life and so many other people that I speak to. So for all of you guys out there, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.